Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 120. We said it was 120 last week, but it's actually 120 this week. It's so this is a kind of podcast equivalent of the great Tom Cruise film Edge of Tomorrow. From now on, every podcast will be episode 120. You will relive the same podcast over and over again until the enemies are defeated.
Groundhog Day in space. What a great movie.
It is a great movie.
What a brilliant movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Fucking Tom Cruise.
It gets better and better the more I watch it.
Yeah. Okay, then, so we'll cover all the same talking points as last week, then. Should I get the notes from last week?
It's not like the world, you know. It's not like the world has moved on, really, has it? You know, genocide in Gaza.
You just did a recording with Michael Rosen and Miriam Margolis.
Yes,
how,
I have.
How did that go?
Fantastic. It was really amazing. Richard Sanders, it will be out on Double Down News fairly soon, I think. Richard Sanders was soliciting titles. I suggested Alte Kackers, which is Yiddish for old shit.
Oh, that's really funny. That's really interesting. Never heard that before.
Yeah, he wasn't. Yeah. Two and a half Jews talk about Israel because,
Who's half Jewish? You?
Me. Well, in a sense, I mean, I'm fully Jewish, you know, as far as the SS is concerned. But my father wasn't Jewish. But I think my mother was kind of double Jewish. I was thinking. She was so fucking Jewish. That's it.
What was your dad then? Protestant?
He was
Church of England.
From, well, Sale is a name from the Isle of Man, you know, so it's a Manx name. His mother, I think, was French. I'm very bad on family shit, which is some kind of weird mental block. But I think his father was maybe from the Isle of Man, and he was some kind of sea captain or something. And in fact, somebody did some research for us, didn't he, which I've already forgotten.
Yes, I've forgotten all that as well. Yes,
I think his mother died quite young, and then he was brought up by a stepmother. So he had a lot of half brothers. Manx is, the Isle of Man was basically settled by Vikings. So I'm half Viking, half Jew. Interesting combination. So he was, I think my father was born in Liverpool.
The Isle of Man is between the Lake District and Northern Ireland. And
But in the sea.
In the sea, yes.
Yes.
And it's a self-governing British crown dependency. I don't know anything about Isle of Man.
Yeah. No, it's an interesting place. It's I think it's got better, really. It was a bit like New Zealand. It was kind of stuck like, it was like Britain, but stuck in the 1950s for a while. But I imagine now it's got more, I mean, it could have fantastic seafood restaurants and stuff like that, you know, rather than places where they just boiled cod in a pan. And there's obviously a lot of money there. And, of course, it's home to one of the greatest racing cyclists of all time, Mark Cavendish, Britain's greatest cyclist, and in many ways the greatest cyclist of all time. In my opinion, Cav, he was from the Isle of Man.
Is he old school, or is he still going?
He's a sprinter. I think he's just retired, although it's hard for him to retire, but he retired. He won more stages than any other cyclist ever.
Manx, the greatest stage, right? Cyclist.
He has retired, has he? But he did. He finally got the record, didn't he? He actually beat Eddy Merckx, I think, and won the most stages of a Tour de France. And I mean, sprinting, I mean, it's just the maddest, most dangerous sport there is, really, being a sprint cyclist in a grand tour.
What? Why? Oh, because you do a tour as a team and you take turns, or what?
No, well, you have to ride the whole tour, so it might be. But then, if the stage is appropriate, so say it's got a flat finish, basically the last. What happens is that all the teams get their sprinters to the front, more or less, or around or near the front, and then the last 250 meters or something, all the sprinters just go flat out, and try and get to the finish line first.
So that's when the most kind of collisions happen.
It's amazingly dangerous. And
how do you get your teammate to the front?
Well, the rest of the team gets them there, basically. And you sometimes a sprinter will have a what they call a specialist lead out man. So we'll have one guy in the team who's dedicated to just getting him to the front of the peloton at exactly the right moment, and then from there he will launch.
How?
It's just by cycling in front of them. I mean, cycling's amazing. Like, I mean, yeah, you can cycle. If somebody's in front of you, I mean, partly you can go a lot faster than if nobody's in front of you, basically. I mean, that's the whole theory of cycle racing.
Like slipstream, like a video game?
Some of it's slipstream. Some of it's just a kind of psychological...
psychological
kind of impetus, really. But yeah, there's been some great lead out men, and you know, those combinations between lead out man and the sprinter are very important, I think. But sometimes, like Cav, he'd lost his sprint. I mean cycle racing, particularly the Tour de France, is so brutal. And I mean, sometimes Cav would have lost his lead up man, would have lost his team, so then he would latch onto somebody else's wheel. You must think so fast. You latch onto the wheel of somebody else who you think is going to make a break for it and stay on their wheel, and then at the last second, jump them, really.
And when you say latch on, you're not talking literally. This is a...
No, but you're millimetres apart at their back wheel.
Whoa. And then their teammate is trying to be behind them as well, so you're kind of like muscling them out of it.
All that shit, yeah.
Wow. So when you cycle as a team,
yes,
so you're not like you're not all just doing your own thing. You really are sticking together.
No. There's all kinds of. So, you know, this is, I mean, so in a team in the classics with the Vuelta a España, the Giro d'Italia, and the Tour de France, you have, I think, a team has 11. Is it 9 or 11 men? And they have a mixture of sprinters, you'll have mountain climbers, and then you'll also have your all-rounders like Pogacar or who can do everything, basically. Usually they can't sprint, but apart from that, they can do mountains and they can do flat, and they can also do time trial, which is where you just race against the clock one after another. But also within that team, you'll have what's called domestiques, and what the domestiques do is they actually drop back to the team car, pick up water and food, gel caps and stuff, and then bring them back to the rest of the team.
Oh my God!
So yeah, so a domestique will never win a stage, but these are the kind of journeyman cyclists who in a way work a lot harder. If their team leader has a breakdown or an accident, they will wait and then lead him back. I mean, it is the most inspiring thing in the world is to see a team in a flying kind of like flying, you know, like a peloton, like a line, like snow geese or something, just leading their leader back into the back of the peloton. It's just the most staring thing I've ever seen, really. It's beautiful, right? And wow. You can argue, a football match lasts 90 minutes, or you know, the Tour de France lasts 3 weeks, and it lasts all day. You know, I mean, the level of expenditure of energy and is immense, really. And we're very lucky at the moment for anybody who's injured. I mean, we have got the greatest, I think in many ways, you've got the greatest cyclists of all time right now, which is Pogacar and Roglic and Jonas Vingegaard. Jonas Vingegaard. Jonas Vingegaard, Pogacar and Roglic, I think, are the three greatest cyclists of all time, really. And it was one of the greatest days of my life when I did commentary on the tour in 2020 or 2021. But I can't remember why we started talking.
Well, Google AI overview says Eddie Merckx is widely considered the greatest cyclist of all time.
There was a lot going on one way and another back then. I think these modern cyclists, they're so faster. They don't take drugs.
So the Isle of Man,
yes,
is a self-governing British crown. So yes. Is it in the UK or not?
Well, yeah, kind of.
It's got its own parliament.
Yes, the Timwald.
And its own constitutional monarchy.
Yeah, and it was used to be. They had flogging and stuff in Isle of Man long after, and I think homosexuality was banned for much longer than it was in the rest of the UK. And they had demented Cockney nuisance Norman Wisdom for quite a long time.
Demented Cockney nuisance?
Yeah, Norman Wisdom.
I'll just let that slide by. Okay, known for its rugged coastline, medieval castles and rural landscape, and it's also got like Viking and Celtic heritage.
And it, for a long time, I think they were offering tax breaks. Yeah. There was a period in the 90s.
Oh, I can imagine.
When a lot of movies were made there, and so Madonna would... I remember when I was there for a literary festival, this policeman, I think, and the policeman have those sort of like police helmets, but in white. Uh-huh. And he got some helmet, he'd got signed. I remember it was like signed by like Madonna and Harrison Ford. And, you know, I mean, a lot of big movie stars had actually, because it can double, you know, it can double for Ireland, it can double for Scotland.
Yes.
And there's, you know, Victorian bits.
Some amazing landscapes.
Yeah, well, I recommend it. You used to fly, I don't know why you fly there now. I flew from London City on one of those. British Aerospace 146s were the last.
Oh man, I've flown out of London City once in my life. I think maybe to go to Edinburgh, maybe, but it was just one of the most incredible experiences to fly out. You spoke recently about landing in was it Hong Kong or Singapore or something? It sounds like that. It's like, you know, flying out of a major city from like the heart of the
middle,
city.
Yeah. And of course, it's a steeper takeoff and landing angle as well. It's normally it's 5 degrees, I think. So it really has to come up fast.
Wow.
To clear the, you know, because of the noise mostly, to clear the building.
So it's a stunning sight, I reckon.
Yeah,
everyone does it once in their life.
It's amazing to land at London City as well, which is suddenly the plane drops.
So your book's going to come out soon.
Yes, it's a big thing, yeah.
I imagine there'll be a book tour of sorts.
Yes.
And a thought I just had, looking at the Isle of Man, and you mentioned the book festival there. I'll shout out to the Isle of Man's flag, which is probably one of the most interesting and unique flags out there.
Yes. And of course, a shout out to Manx cats. They have no tails.
Oh, I've heard of these, yeah.
Mature.
No, did they used to be wild cats out there?
I don't know.
And so I'm thinking of, during our book, our book tour. Yeah. During your book tour, maybe I could trail behind you with your bike and we could do bike ride videos in all the weird places you go.
Maybe. Or maybe I just want to get the fucking book. We'll see. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how. I mean, I'm a bit worried about my physical kind of, you know, stamina. It's 10 years since I've done this.
Well, maybe we can pick two or three locations that you...
Yeah.
Because Isle of Man would be fascinating to go around on the
bikes. The launch is September the 9th at the Royal Geographical Society, so I'd urge people to come along to that.
That's in Kensington.
That's where they
launched the Siege book.
About
the Iranian embassy siege that my dad was a hostage in. And it's just a few doors down from the Iranian embassy. And during the time of the Iranian embassy, it was where the kind of police would deliver their press conferences, their daily updates to the press.
I'm sure the Iranian ambassador will be at my event.
There's a bit in the book when the SAS finally storm in and the explosions all pop off. You could hear everything from the Geographical Society. Yeah. All the press were in there at that time and they all came out, ran to the embassy.
I remember. Have I said this before? Because we lived in the 12th floor of this tower block in Fulham and I said to Linda, I saw a plume of smoke. It was the weirdest thing. It was very clear. It was a very still day. I just saw this long black plume of smoke coming from Kensington. I said to Linda, they've gone in.
Wild.
I said, and indeed they had. Yeah, so the book and how I tried to change the world by walking down the middle of the street shouting is now available for pre-order, and I beg you to pre-order it. I never ask anything of you, but I beg you to buy this book because I want it to be a big success.
I'll tell you what, I will put in the podcast description, whether you're listening to this on an app or watching it on Patreon, or listening to it on YouTube, there will be in the description a link where you can go and pre-order the motherfucker. Go pre-order this book. This is how nowadays books get in the charts, books make a name for themselves, and books, the best way to help them succeed is to pre-order it.
Yeah.
And it would mean a great deal to our good man and supreme leader, Alexei Sale.
It would.
If you were to visit that link, if you just want to hear it hourly, it's genius.alexisalehb.us/alexisalehb. Harriet Bravo? What's the H?
Yeah, Hotel.
Hotel Bravo, fuck me. And you can get signed copies. People were asking in the Instagram, can I get a signed copy? Can I get a signed copy? So now I have an answer. Yeah, if you buy it from the Gay Pride shop, you get a signed copy. If you pre-order it from Waterstones, the Bookhouse Browty Ferry, Golden Hair.
All the indie, Well, what I'm going to, I mean, the way that works is I go to a giant warehouse in a town in Suffolk called Bungay, and I'm just going to sign like 1,500 copies. Means that they're then sold, and those will be the signed copies. Those signed copies will then be dispersed from the giant warehouse in Bungay to, all those bookshops. That's how it works. But, so you can get signed copies,
You're going to do that in one sitting?
I'm going to go to Bungay, I think, on August the 10th, and, get there in a car, or get there on the train to Clay's, apparently, wherever the hell that is. Their car will take me to Bungay. And, I'll sign all day and have lunch and then train home.
That's
quite near, Warbleswick and Southwold and all that, all those Richard Curtis-type people who all live down there.
That's not how the Americans do it. Through, I don't know, podcasts I've heard, they get the slip, the book slip, and they deliver boxes and boxes of them to the author.
Oh, right, okay.
And so they're not delivering thousands of books, just the fucking the slip,
yeah,
and
then
the hardback.
You sign that, right.
It's just in your own time. They go, you got a month or you got 2 weeks, and they just, whenever they have a spare minute, they'll sign 10 copies, 100 copies, whatever, and then they'll send them all back. But you're going to do 1,500, did you say?
Yes.
Damn, son. All right, Alexi's putting his graft in. The least you can do is go to the description of this podcast, click the link, and pre-order the book. Please. Let me see how much they'll have to pay to pre-order. £20 for a signed copy.
Bargain.
Come on.
Come on.
Come on. Go support the Gay Pride Bookshop. Order it from there.
Yeah.
That's my recommendation. Yeah. I've been in there a couple of times, actually.
They moved, and now they moved back to the original premises.
Well,
yeah, it's very near my house. It used to be even nearer.
It'd be easier to go there than go to Bungay.
Nobody needs to go to Bungay, apart from David Morrissey, the Scouse actor who lives there sometimes.
Right.
So the Sunday before last, me and Miriam and Michael Rosen finally got together to do this.
Oh yeah, back to last week's
film.
Oh, something I failed to bring up last week that I should have.
All right.
Did you watch this SNL UK?
I did. Yeah.
I was pleasantly surprised.
I mean, I'm no George Foreacres who I used on, I think, Absence of Normal. I know George anyway, because he's a mate of Joe Nunnery, the producer of Sandwich Bar. I know Emma City because we did Richard Osman's House of Games together, and then I've seen her since the Radio 4 party, and she's very nice.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was. I mean, it's a tough job doing sketch. You know, I think sketch comedy is hard in a way, really. And obviously, George has had. There was an article by Brian Logan about George Foray, because he was always likely to be the first breakout star of Saturday Night Live, but. Yeah, it's okay. I mean, I haven't watched a huge amount of it, but it was, yeah, it was, yeah, it wasn't, yeah, I was pleasantly surprised, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Well, George Foray was a highlight of the show. He's yeah. Very, very, very strong.
And that What Kind of Irish Is Your Granddad was a very, I mean, it was weirdly done that he had to mime to it, but.
Did he?
Miming very badly, I thought, just opening and closing his mouth, finally. But I mean, you know, when you're doing a show live like that, it's, you know, I guess that was probably the best way. Obviously, if you filmed it, you would do it differently, record it. But anyway, but yeah, it's a very funny song. And then Nicola Coughlan. And yeah, it's okay. It's all right.
It was all right.
Yeah.
I had the forms to audition for it and everything. And right. I just fucking forgot to audition for it. It would have been a fun experience to do that. But yeah, I know a couple of the people involved. And Annabelle Marlowe, whose brother wrote Six, the musical, and she was in first cast of that. I was in the Musical Comedy Awards with her. And one of the writers, Omar Bedawi, glad they got an Arab in there, in the Iraqi British. Comedian. I toured with him with Bassem Youssef. We were Bassem's support, me and Omar together. Which makes it all the more painful that I forgot to audition, because it feels like it could have been within my grasp.
Yeah.
It was a half kind of self-conscious lack of confidence, and just also half just, oh, was that it? Was that yesterday? Oh, fuck, I didn't do it. All I had to do was fill in a form. But I was pleasantly surprised. I think, you know, Stuart Lee's right. It could have been more hard cuttings instead of just very light character-based satire.
Yeah.
It could have been much more dark and cutting edge fucking criticism and takedown of government. And how we've been lied to and misrepresented over the last 3 years, and how angry we all feel at our government and our powerful billionaire class. It would have been great to have some... satisfaction of catharsis is right, seeing them being really taken down on this mainstream show. But what are you to expect from you know, NBC funded Sky production? That was about as hard hitting as it was going to be, wasn't it? You weren't going to get anything more than that. That's what podcasts and YouTube are for.
Yep. But actually, talking about Sky, somebody posted a link. The last comment, I think, on YouTube is a link to a piece on Sky News Australia. Sky News Australia is much closer to Fox or GB News, as it were.
On our last episode on YouTube.
Yeah.
It's the latest comment on there. Yeah, I saw that. I didn't click on it. Go on.
It's a piece I did. I'd forgotten about it, but it's obviously been in the ether because Linda was looking at it a couple of days ago.
A piece you did?
Yeah, it was something I did. I think when Israel I think Operation Cast Lead, was that 2014? Although I look a bit older than that. It's some, you know, Israeli massacre in Gaza that I'm... Somebody, I can't remember who, they came around to the house and interviewed me, but it's a great line and I really must use it again. What I say is, and this is what Sky News Australia was moaning about, I say that Israel is the Jimmy Savile of nation states.
Huh.
And I'd forgotten saying that, but it is, it's a really good line. And it does, as a lot of the comments under the Sky News are saying, you know, it nails it. It's a place that, as a nation state, it's a place that is obviously, it's a place that in enacting its own base desires, it just. Yeah, I was going to say that. Yeah, it was. It destroys the lives of children. I mean, literally, it destroys. Yes. But you know, psychologically and physically, it destroys the lives of children. And also, it's endlessly indulged by the establishment. You know, which again, Jimmy Savile was, and it's a demented, ugly, vile place. And so, I think that I'm going to use that. Thank you, Sky News Australia, for reminding me of that. Like, I'm going to use that. Use that all the time. It's a good. I think it is a good.
Extremely.
It gets a joke, but
dude, I don't know if you just said this. I should be paying attention, but I was watching the video that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Not just the actions of Israel; it's that the everyone around Jimmy covered up for him and ignored his crimes.
Yeah.
Did you say that already?
I was saying that just now.
Sorry.
That's all right. Linda said she thought Graham Linehan had been slagging it off because he's gone all fucking pro-Israel now. But also the guy doing the commentary in
just to clarify for our listeners, this is a very recent Sky News, just from a couple of days ago.
Yeah.
They dug up this clip of you saying that.
Wild comment, yeah.
About 10 years ago. And he's calling you an anti-Semite, and he's like digging into this guy, Rowan Dean from Sky News Australia.
He's got a head that looks like a boiled ham.
Does look a lot like a boiled ham. You're right.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It's like half melting as well.
Yeah.
His eyes are like barely managing to peer through these flaps of skin on his face.
Yeah.
He looks like a miserable bastard. Fucking hell.
Yeah, but
he hasn't smiled in years.
Yeah, no, thank you for bringing that to my attention. I will be using that more and more often, and let's keep this scandal going.
And the headline is, I'm a celebrity, stupid. And he's talking about all the celebrities who speak out for Palestine, calling them all wankers.
Well, stupid.
You are the wanker, Rowan Dean.
Because we object to genocide. So anyway, there's me and Miriam and... Michael Rosen talking about being, you know, Jews and Israel, and I think it'd make an interesting film, you know. Hopefully.
We haven't done Film Club in a while. When should we do that?
Should we do it next week? I plan to watch Touch of Evil. Maybe I'll watch it.
Oh, that's a good idea. Should we watch Touch of Evil?
Yeah, I said that last week. Are you
This is last week. Remember, we're redoing.
Oh, right.
That's what I thought you were doing.
Are you doing the...
Keep bringing up Miriam Margot. Listen. Touch of Evil. We're going to watch that before next week's episode. Touch of Evil, 1958. Now, I've had some messages encouraging us to watch the director's cut of it. They're saying, please get the DVD or the Blu-ray and watch it that way. That's not extremely feasible, not just for us, but for the thousands of listeners at home as well, to all go out and get this Blu-ray.
No, you can't. I mean, if you get it by of a streamer, it'll just be the brutalized studio cut that they did.
Yeah, apparently there was loads left on the cutting room floor that George Orwell was not happy about. And
not George Orwell.
Years... George Orwell.
Orson Welles.
But years later, even after his death, I think some people found his notes and tried to recreate as best as they can his version.
Well, I mean, if you can watch the director's cut, yes, obviously do. But I think, yeah, I mean, it's pretty. I mean, even the brutalized version that they released is pretty amazing.
So how? Yes, I'm trying to see now if it's viable to watch the 1998 Orson Welles cut. Criterion Collection Director's Cut. Yeah, it looks like that's only on Blu-ray. I don't think it's fair to ask everyone to do that. So we're going to stick with whatever the commercial version is.
Yeah,
that's the version you grew up watching. That's the version you remembered last week.
Yeah.
So yes, let's sorry to let you down. Devout movie fans who messaged me very nicely on Patreon and email. But yes, Touch of Evil, 1958. Watch it for next week. We're going to talk about it. What was the big news story that I wanted to bring up with you? What do you think it was?
While
we're on the topic, Patreon legend Mark, who is an incredible film reviewer himself, great write-ups on films he does. I'll drop a link to his website in the description. Fuck it, I'll give you a plug, Mark. Great to hear that Film Club is back, he says. Apart from that incredible opening one-shot, my favorite thing about Touch of Evil is the line, "This isn't the real Mexico," which is spoken by Charlton Heston. "This isn't the real Mexico." Terrible. Who is not a real Mexican? I saw a reel on Instagram only last week with Wells being asked about Elia Kazan and not holding back at all. Elia Kazan. Not holding back at all about how much he hates him for informing on his friends to McCarthy before going on to make On the Waterfront, a film which he claims is a tribute to The Informer. Thanks, Mark, for your insight. Join in the Patreon conversation, the chat rooms. Send questions for Alexi at patreon.com/AlexiSellPodcast. Chuck us £3, £5, £10 a month, and you can join the club and watch Alexi Reacts every week. We're about to film one after this recording. We're going to have you react to Sorry About Last Week.
Last night.
I am not on the ball today. No. Sorry About Last.
Good job you didn't do that.
Night.
SNL audition. You
Fuck you. What was the big news story I wanted to talk to you about? What do you think it was?
Iraq, Iran.
Well, certainly, yeah. Oh, the fucking Israel just voted to legalize the death penalty for Palestinians only if a military court finds them guilty of terrorism, which is what they most often do, very often with less than 1 minute before the judge. Palestinians get charged with terrorism. And sometimes the judge doesn't even make eye contact with the suspect. And now they're going to
hang
them.
Yes, the deputy speaker, I think, of Knesset had tears of joy in her eyes, and Smotrich and Ben-Gavir were toasting in champagne it's terrible, but it just, you know, it just shows you how much, you know, that Israel is Nazi Germany. Really, that it's just the population support, you know, the unfortunately the whole population, most of the majority of the population has been brought on board with this terrible, terrible ideology. It's just the worst country in the world. It's the Jimmy Savile of nation states.
The horrendous evil malevolence never ceases to escalate.
No, they find new ways. And obviously they're stealing more of South Lebanon and, you know, blah, blah, blah. All that. It's a terrible... it was always a really bad idea, and it gets worse, really.
What's the latest in Lebanon? What's the latest in Lebanon? Have they taken land? They've annexed land, essentially.
Yeah, there's a buffer zone. And also, they're carrying on the techniques they pioneered in Gaza of murdering medical staff and murdering journalists. And then, you know, issuing some vague reason, you know, claim that they never back up with evidence. It shames us all. It's a stain on humanity, Israel, and we need to do everything we can to cease to for it to be a state in which only Jews have, human rights, for it to make it into a state where everybody has human rights. There was also yesterday, carrying on Keir Starmer's path towards Germany in 1930, whenever, Ben Jamal and Chris Nyhnem.
Fuck, found guilty of...
Yeah.
Yes.
Because I was there. I was right there. You know,
we were both there. This before.
Were you there at the front? Yeah, well, I was there in the front line. I was carrying the banner. I don't know if I've talked about this before.
Yes, and I witnessed you walking with everyone else carrying the banner, and you were walking up to lay flowers down.
Yeah, in front of the police.
At the boundary of where you were allowed to go.
Yes, well, that's the, yeah.
You had accepted that you they'd put these strict boundaries on you.
Yeah.
Because, yes, the plan was to take those flowers to, I can't remember what the intent was, but the police had said, no, you're not allowed to go there. This is where we're drawing the line. So you all fucking marched up with your banner up to where they drew the line and you laid the flowers down there.
Yeah. And then they arrested a load, and they arrested, well, they threw Chris Nyhnem on the ground and then they arrested Ben. And, you know, it's all part of this, you know. Yeah, and then this was obviously all done not in front of a jury, which would have definitely not convicted them, but it was done in front of a judge. There was a really, it's really pretty bad. Lewis Goodall, though I don't always mind LBC and, you know, your former Newsnight presenter and hounded out to the BBC by Robbie Gibb, did a thing on, you know, Starmer, where's it all gone wrong? And then, no, it was pretty feeble shit, really. At no point did he talk about Starmer's authoritarianism, his repression of free speech, which is a major, I think, thing that people see about him and see that that's profoundly wrong. That obviously the repression of protest, deliberate repression and silencing and punishing of protest in favor of anybody who speaks out for Palestine, against genocide. You know, and the way that the Labour government is so completely in the pocket of the Israel lobby, you know, Lewis Goodall never really touched on that either because he doesn't see it because he's a kind of Westminster insider or he didn't want to go there. But it was all right, but it was pretty feeble shit. I can't remember. There's a shithead called Will Hutton who writes for, I think, The Observer and Economist, and somebody was saying they'd heard him talking to somebody. You can see I think one of the Labour Party's plans is that they think they want to make closer ties with Europe, having Starmer having sabotaged Jeremy Corbyn's perfectly reasonable plan to have a close ties with Europe, but not go back into the EU. Starmer is going to try and use that to rekindle, make people forget about the innate evil of the Labour Party. Oh, and all the BBC also allowed Josh Simmons, the bastard behind Labour Together probe, and them using private investigators to investigate friends of the show, Paul Holden and Andrew Feinstein. They allowed him to just kind of exculpate himself with untruth for 40 minutes. And Paul Holden's complained mightily about that. We'll see if the BBC does anything about it. And the world, I don't know what Trump said in his statement from the Oval Office last night about the war in Iran. It's a pity the government of Iran isn't a bit nicer, but, you know, at least they are giving a lot nicer, but they are giving both Israel and United States, they're giving them a right fucking pounding, and they've never met somebody who stood up to them before.
Mm.
I think they're also, the Israelis are losing a lot of troops in southern Lebanon. I've seen what looks like verified, you know, looks like, you know, true footage of attacks on Merkava tanks using Russian and Iranian anti-tank weapons. I think they've lost, I mean, I know Hezbollah claims they've lost like 25 Merkavas. I think maybe they have. So, yeah, it's all still. Yeah, it's all still going on. I offer no prognostication of what's going to, I don't know what's going to happen.
My ongoing fear is all this complaints about Iran's nuclear capabilities is that Israel is the one that has fucking tons of nukes.
Yeah.
And then they're in a losing war, or they're in a frustratingly difficult war that they weren't, that they're not used to. Mm. So they're just used to pummeling powerless victims or people who have, you know, very measly comparative powers.
Yeah.
And so they're so used to an easy kind of fight that, and they're so childish and immature and innately evil that I'm just terrified that they're just going to lash out in the most awful, unspeakable way in frustration. And
use one of their nuclear weapons. Yeah. Well, we'll certainly be in a different world then. Yeah.
It's already a different world than it was 3 years ago. But yes, by a long shot, it'll be a lot more different.
Yeah.
But, you know, if they want to create their greater Israel vision, why not just nuke that whole map that they want to mark out? Wait a few years for the radiation to calm down and then start building. Just do it. Put us out of our misery. Put us out of our fucking misery. Why are you dragging it out?
Well, yes, they fear the consequences, I suppose.
They should. And they should already fear. They've just been getting away with it. It's like the child of a gangster can just bully everyone in his school because no one will dare fight back.
Yeah.
So
it's like the Jimmy Savile nation state.
Yes, some could say.
That's right. I think you could say that.
Yeah, someone really interesting said that once, actually. Really clever, clever genius.
But it's also, I don't,
Oh, my God. And, obviously, you know, it's affecting us here. You know, look at, the petrol prices fills me with fear as well. I don't know whether to fill my car up now or wait a couple of days, see if there's a dip in the prices.
Oh, my God, we filled our car up, luckily, a few weeks ago in that Asda we both like in the Kent Road.
Kent Road Asda,
It was like 1:30.
We should do a book signing there. Go on, sorry.
Well, it is the happiest place. I mean, some you go there and it's all the happy nations, and then often then they're on national dress if it's a Sunday, buying cheap shit. It's a place. You know, you go there once.
It is.
You know, you go there on Friday. It's different, very different to a Sunday. But we've very cheap diesel. We filled up there before Trump's assault on Iran. It was like 1:34, and it's now like 1:85 or something. So that's 50.
No, that for diesel possibly.
Yeah, for diesel, so it's 50p a litre dearer. My car theoretically would take like 70 litres. That's 35 quid. That's a lot.
35 quid.
More.
Fill up my car. So I'm just watching my petrol level go down and down because I'm too scared to fill up.
Yeah.
It's only going to get worse, isn't it? So I should just fucking fill it up.
I think so, yeah.
Fucking hell. Come on, guys, sign up to the Patreon, please. Help me. Trump's been... he keeps giving these double messages, basically.
Yeah, I don't know whether that's just... I know I can give no real insight into Trump. I wish, is he Starmer? I know who Starmer is. I know who he knows. I know what social class he's from. I understand. I mean, I know where he lives. And
his dad was a toolmaker.
His dad was a toolmaker. He wanted to work for the NHS. And I know the influences that are at play within him. I mean, the Israel lobby, the betting lobby, the arms industry. I understand and can sometimes predict and can certainly accurately comment on his moves. Trump, I can't read at all, really. But I don't know enough about him. I don't know whether he is whether he's really cunning or he's just insane, really. I mean, you can certainly see the doubt. I mean, he's clearly a very damaged individual. But just whether this is part of some great plan or not, I'm not really sure. If anybody else knows, let me know in the comments.
Get ready for some third-hand insight. My friend was telling me about a video, a Hasan Piker video he was watching. Do you watch his stuff? I know
I watch him on YouTube. He's very attractive. You know, I mean, he streams on Twitch, doesn't he, every day, live.
Right.
He's outright Marxist, socialist. I don't know whether he's exactly a Marxist, but he's very left-wing. He's Cenk Uygur's nephew, isn't he? You know, Cenk of the new Young Turk.
Oh, is he?
Cenk is his uncle. You often seen Cenk shouting on Piers Morgan, Uncensored, or whatever it's called. But Hasan Piker, yes, go on.
Well, he was talking about some predictions who he thinks will be the next president. Or where the Republicans will go post Trump.
Yeah.
And I'll be brief because I didn't watch the video myself, but essentially he thinks that the Republicans are going to pivot hard against Israel, and the next Republican leader will be someone who's Christian, anti-Israel, someone along the lines, if not Tucker Carlson. This will be deeply rooted in real anti-Semitism,
right.
not anti-Israel anti-Semitism, actual anti-Semitism, right. Because, you know, they're going to get sick. They're going to be sick of this Iran war and war in the Middle East in general, and American money going to Israel and not to its own people, to the working class.
Mm-hmm.
They're only going to see their demographic, you know, losing more and more, so they're eventually going to reach breaking point, go against the whole Trump ethos, and elect someone, like I said, anti-Israel,
taking AIPAC money, presumably
anti-Israel, anti-AIPAC, pro-church, real anti-Jew, and things will get scary in a new way. But at least they won't throw money at Israel.
Okay, right, well. Hasan Piker knows his country.
So you didn't see that video.
And of course, it's also true that all those Christian fundamentalist evangelicals like Pete Hegseth, what they believe is fundamentally, even though they support Israel, it's fundamentally anti-Semitic, because their belief is that all the Jews in the world need to come to Israel. When they get to Israel, they then convert to Christianity. The ones that don't convert to Christianity will be slaughtered by God, and then Jesus will appear on earth, and it will be the rapture. I mean, that's what they believe. So that's really, all Jews are getting in the way of our Lord Jesus coming back on earth. So they've got to get them to Israel, get them all to convert, and the ones that don't convert, they kill them. So, yeah, it's pretty anti-Semitic anyway, really.
Yes, that's where their support of Israel comes from. Man, I'd love Jesus to come back.
Jesus is a great guy. I would love him to come back. And people to listen and go along with his actual preachings.
Yeah. They'd all fucking, their minds would be blown. They'd be like, oh, you don't support us at all.
Yeah.
We got it all wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, we're supposed to love each other. Wait a second, Jesus, you're brown.
Yeah, if a man has two coats and you have two coats and a man has none, give him one of your coats, fuck face.
Yeah, fuck face.
Yeah. But Jesus was all right. It's just the people who believe in him pervert his teaching so completely. Oh, that's a bad thing. Should we, are there any questions or should we?
Jesus was all right.
He was. Yeah. I'm not, you know, I don't know if you, you know, yeah, I'm going out on a limit. I said, Jesus was all right. he was a good guy, Jesus.
I'm looking for questions from listeners, but keep an eye out. We've got some fun live gigs coming up.
Are they announcing our live?
Let's save that for a few. Let's announce that. But yeah, we're going to be doing the Roundhouse with probably Diane Morgan live in August.
Are we doing the Diggers Festival in Wellingborough as well?
Yes. So we are a couple of live dates I can confirm right now. Saturday, 2nd of May at the Wellingborough Northants May Day and Wellingborough Diggers Festival. I think we're headlining that. I think it's at 8 p.m. We need to be able to get a train home afterwards. So I think 8 p.m. is our show, maybe 9 or 8:30.
I'm not staying up. I'm not working at 9. We'd have to go in the car.
We're headlining. You're not working at 9. What do you mean?
What time's our show?
I think 8 o'clock.
Right.
We finish by 9 or 9:30. And they're going to get us in a car to the station for the train home.
Okay. All right.
That's the plan. And the train will take us to King's Cross right down your road. Yeah.
All right.
But yeah, 2nd of May, Wellingborough Diggers Festival. Look it up online, folks. Buy your tickets. Also, we're playing the Rope Tackle 30th of July.
I didn't know that.
That's down in Shoreham. We're returning to the Rope Tackle. So that's much excited about that.
Rope Tackle.
Listener questions. Let me find one to throw at you. Something about OTT. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but someone on Patreon, Satchmo, asks, do you have any regrets, Alexi, about recommending that Lenny Henry use the Katanga catchphrase on OTT? Might it be misrepresented as caricaturing African languages? Alexi, I know nothing about this. Please explain the context before you answer the question.
So Lenny had... he invented this character for OTT called Joshua Yarlog, which is a play on on Mike Yarwood, as I remember. And so it was a sort of, he did a, like an African accent, and he was like, I think the gag was that he was a stand-up comic, but he was African. He says he was looking for a catchphrase, and I said, why don't you say Katanga? Now, Katanga, apart from, it's not the cultural appropriation so much as the fact that Katanga was the scene of a massacre during the civil war in the Congo and the wars waged by the CIA and Britain and Belgium against Patrice Lumumba, of course, one of the many great potential African leaders, black leaders who were murdered by, you know, the forces of the right, you know, which you could add, you know, Salvatore Allende, Patrice Lumumba, Fred Hampton, and many more. So he says, I said, Katanga. So, which is, you know, so I don't know what, it's not, I mean, So he would do like, you go Katanga, which, as I say, I can't think of an example really, like the massacre of the Polish officers in the Katyn forest, perhaps use that as your catchphrase. Or I'm trying to steer clear of Holocaust imagery. My Lie. U.S. massacre in Vietnam. I don't remember.
I see.
Telling him to do it, really. He says, I said, maybe I did, but I maintain that I can't remember telling him to do it, really. It was all very unfortunate, but it was a different time, really. So
you think it was a bad idea, whether you recommended it or not? Or was it funny at the time?
I mean, it was, it's not a good idea, is it? I mean, to shout out the name of a massacre.
I suppose.
That's your catchphrase. I would recommend if young comedians are looking for advice, I know people tune in for tips in as I invented, essentially. Modern comedy, people are looking for tips. I would say probably don't use as your catchphrase the site of a massacre. I think it might even have been a massacre of nuns. I'm not sure, that might be something.
Well, yes, not quite how you're diddling, is it? But
No, so the kids steer clear of that. It would be one more piece of advice.
But if it's some form of, you know, ironic commentary, you know, so it depends how deep the character is. Is he doing the character as a commentary of English perception of Africans and what an African comedian would look like via the lens of a British audience, and therefore maybe there's some sort of deeper meaning to him saying that? Trying to give it a
year. You would have to ask Len about that. I'm not prepared to be drawn on making value judgments on the quality of the work or the meaning. I would just say, I believe it wasn't me who told him to say Katanga. But
it's,
maybe
it seems distasteful. It's like a Palestinian comic going, Gaza!
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Oh, well, dear Yassin.
Yeah.
Any number of places.
Fairs. I had a neighbor once, he's moved out now, and he used to say fairs instead of like fair enough or something. He'd go, fairs. And me and B used to make fun of him, take the piss. And between ourselves, we go, fairs, as kind of an inside joke. Like, wasn't it funny that he said that? And now I find myself saying it.
Yes, that's the trouble, isn't it? You start saying something ironical.
As a reflex, you know?
Yeah.
I'm like, no, I mean it as a joke, and not everyone who hears me say it knows I'm joking. Yeah. And now it's just become the normal way to say it. So how do you have to deprogram myself? But, you know, there are bigger problems in the world. So what have we learned today? Isle of Man is the birthplace of one of the greatest cyclists of all time. Go to the description of the podcast for a link to Alexi's new book. Please buy that shit.
Yeah.
SNL was fine. Could have gone harder, but we shouldn't expect it to because of where it is. It's, you know, it's a mainstream show. Jimmy Savile is Israel.
Israel is the Jimmy Savile of nation states.
And Jimmy Savile is the Israel of dead comedians. And don't shout out massacre locations
as a catchphrase.
Comedy catchphrase. Yeah, it's been an education, Alexi. I will see you in 10 minutes to record Alexi Reacts, which is only going to be available on Patreon in full video. And if you're not a patron, I guess we'll see you next week when we will be talking about the movie Touch of Evil, Orson Welles, 1958. Seek it out, watch it, take notes. We'll be doing the same. See you next week, Alexi Sells Film Club. That's all I have to say.
All I have to say is bye-bye. You've been listening to the Alexi Sells podcast. This show is produced and edited by Talal Karkouti. Music by Tarbush Records. Thanks to Audio Boom for hosting us. Please keep your emails coming in at alexiselpodcast@gmail.com. Goodbye.